Good morning, Kodiak. The time is now 1 minute before noon. I'm Kavitha George, and you're listening to KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM. Today in Kodiak, it's 55 degrees and mostly cloudy. Today is going to be sunny, though, with highs near 57. Calm winds becoming east around 5 miles per hour. Tonight should be partly cloudy, lows around 47 with calm winds, and Saturday mostly sunny, highs near 57. Sunshine continuing into Sunday, but it'll turn mostly cloudy by Monday. In Homer today, it's 54 degrees, and Fair today, mostly cloudy, highs near 60 degrees, west winds around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with lows around 44, west winds around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm after midnight. And Saturday in Homer, mostly sunny with highs near 62. In Anchorage, it's mostly cloudy today, 56 degrees, 20% chance of showers before 1 p.m. for Anchorage. Mostly cloudy with highs near 63 degrees and calm winds becoming west around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tonight in Anchorage, mostly cloudy, lows around 47. Isolated showers tomorrow in Anchorage after 10 a.m. Partly cloudy Saturday night and turning mostly sunny by Sunday morning for Anchorage. Looking at the marine forecast for today, from Marmot Island to Sikkenak, there's a variable wind of 10 knots with seas at 4 feet. Tonight, south winds of 15 knots with seas at 4 feet. Chiniak Bay today, variable winds of less than 10 knots with seas at 3 feet. And tonight, variable winds of 10 knots with seas at 2 feet. Marmot Bay today, variable winds of less than 10 knots with seas at 3 feet. And tonight, southwest winds of 10 knots with seas at 2 feet. Shelikof Strait today, southwest winds of 15 knots with seas at 4 feet. And tonight, southwest winds of 20 knots in Shelikof Strait, seas at 6 feet. You're listening to KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. While communities across the U.S. are implementing sweeping police reforms in the wake of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis police custody last month, President Trump is giving a mixed message when it comes to the practice of chokeholds. Here's NPR's Tamara Keith.
Floyd was on the ground with an officer's knee on his neck for nearly 9 minutes before he died. House Democrats have proposed a ban on so-called chokeholds, and the top Republican in the House, Kevin McCarthy, announced he'd support it too. But in an interview with Fox News, President Trump asked what would happen if a police officer got in a one-on-one fight with a, quote, real bad person.
And you get somebody in a chokehold, and what are you going to do now? Let go and say, oh, let's start all over again. I'm not allowed to have you in a chokehold.
But then he added,
it would be, I think, a very good thing that, generally speaking, it should be ended.
It's not clear what policies Congress will settle on, if any, or whether Trump will support what they come up with. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
New York is now formally banning police chokeholds. Here's Governor Andrew Cuomo.
How many times? This was Eric Garner. This was Abner Louima. It was Amadou Diallo. Same case over and over and over, and still no change. And Mr. Floyd's murder, God bless this country for standing up and saying enough is enough.
Governor Andrew Cuomo signed a bill into law today. The governor also raised concerns about protests and other large gatherings that could lead to a surge in coronavirus cases, again, if crowds don't follow safety guidelines. Ahead of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention would likely concur.
I know that people are eager to return to normal activities and ways of life. However, it's important that we remember that the situation is unprecedented and that the pandemic has not ended.
New safety guidance today out of the CDC's Robert Redfield includes: at a hotel, take the stairs instead of the elevator, use hand sanitizer after using the ATM, and nix the high fives and elbow bumps at the gym. Well, Oregon Governor Kate Brown is suspending reopenings for now in the most populous county, which includes Portland. Here's Oregon Public Broadcasting's Mira Powell.
Multnomah County is the only Oregon county that has not started reopening, and it won't be able to for at least another week. Governor Brown says she's pausing all pending reopening applications for the next 7 days due to an increase in coronavirus cases.
This one-week pause will give our public health experts time to assess what factors are driving the spread of the virus and determine if we need to adjust our approach to reopening.
Oregon saw nearly 180 new confirmed and presumptive coronavirus cases Thursday, the highest number of cases announced in a single day since the start of the pandemic. For NPR News, I'm Mira Powell in Portland.
The Dow has closed up 84 points to end the day at 25,212. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
And now a look at local and statewide news. Kodiak's third positive case of COVID-19 was originally said to be picked up while the patient was traveling. At Thursday's weekly update on local coronavirus issues, City Manager Mike Twenge said that information was incorrect. The person with COVID-19 did not travel, so the disease has been locally... So the disease was found locally. KMXT's Maggie Wall has more.
It's called community transmission, or community spread. It's defined as a case of COVID-19 for which no specific origin can be pinpointed. For example, the patient has not been near anyone who is known to have COVID-19, nor has the person traveled recently. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, says it is possible in such cases that the patient has come into contact with someone who is carrying the coronavirus but doesn't show symptoms of COVID-19. Speaking at Thursday's noon community briefing from the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization, Kodiak City Manager Mike Twenge said COVID case number 3, which was announced on Wednesday, is now being described as a community transmission and is not travel-related. He then asked public health nurse Elsa DeHart to explain.
The Emergency Operations Center announced a third positive COVID-19 case in Kodiak. At that time, there was very little information available beyond what was reported. Today, we have more details about this individual, and once again, we have public health nurse Elsa DeHart here to provide this update for you. Elsa?
Originally, we had thought this was somebody who had traveled very recently, but it was somebody who had traveled a couple months ago. So that's not a concern at this time, although it is a concern because that does mean that this case was most likely a community transmission. So we do have the virus out there in Kodiak, and I hope everybody's being pays attention and does just what Mike was talking to us about.
Twenge said the virus is in Kodiak, and residents need to take precautions.
This virus wants a host. The way to avoid this disease is to social distance. Of course, wash your hands and wear a mask that covers your nose and mouth.
DeHart said people should be self-monitoring, especially if they feel they have any COVID-19 symptoms, such as fever or persistent cough.
Everybody should always be monitoring for symptoms and watching. And if you do get sick, please go see your healthcare provider and get tested. Testing's very available right now on the island.
There has been some confusion locally about negative test results and test accuracy. DeHart reminds people of one of the unusual characteristics of testing results.
And remember, you know, a positive is a positive. And of course, a negative only is a point in time and means that there's no virus detected at that moment.
For KMXT News, I'm Maggie Wall.
Starting Monday, Alaskans can apply for a lottery designed to provide some financial relief if they are struggling with making rent or mortgage payments. Jared Griffin with KMXT News talked with Stacy Barnes of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to find out how this new $10 million program will help Kodiak.
This week, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the state housing authority, announced a $10 million program to assist Alaskans with their rent and mortgage obligations. This funding is a slice of the $1.5 billion the state received from the Federal CARES Act to use for homeless prevention with a focus on Alaskans who lost income due to COVID-19 and, without government assistance, may otherwise lose their housing to eviction or foreclosure. Families in Alaska with households that have lost income and are at less than 80% of the area median income as a result of COVID-19 are eligible to apply for up to 1 month of rent or mortgage relief. Each household is eligible for no more than $1,200. Rent relief includes utilities. Mortgage relief includes principal and interest only. Stacy Barnes, Vice President of Government Relations and spokesperson for the program, explained what the qualifications mean for Kodiak.
So they would have to be in Kodiak at $78,720 annually or less in order to apply. If they go to that website, alaskahousingrelief.org, alaskahousingrelief.org. They'll be able to check their eligibility for that.
Barnes also noted that this financial relief will go straight to the renter's landlord or the homeowner's mortgage lender, and they may apply it to any back payments owed or apply it to July or August's payment.
Well, I think that it will depend based on whether they're in arrears. And if they are behind, that money is going to be applied toward their May or June rent. If they are current on it but have experienced the hardship and qualify for the assistance, that money would go toward their July or August rent, depending on when the payment is made to the landlord or to the lender.
The idea of a lottery is unique to state housing assistance programs funded by the CARES Act. Other states use a first-in-line approach or a needs-based system, and the AHFC recognizes that a lottery system can confuse the public. There is no cost to enter the lottery, and it was devised by the corporation to better assist rural and remote Alaskans, and even Kodiakans out fishing.
But one of the things that we were sensitive to here is, first, we already utilize a lottery program in our public housing in Anchorage, where we often see the number of people who are telling us that they have need is greater than the number of units that we have available. And it's a process that's worked really well for us. But we also thought about people, frankly, who live in Kodiak and might be on a boat. We've seen and learned from a variety of programs connected to the CARES Act that in a first-in, first-out methodology, we would be putting a lot of stress on Alaskans to perhaps get off their boat, to be there, to apply on June 15th, first thing right away, so that they could have access to those funds.
Barnes estimates that this program will help between 8 and 12,000 households, about 5% of all households in Alaska. And that's just an estimate of Alaskans' need at this time.
So we don't have really good data right now on how many people are actually behind on their rent or behind on their mortgage, other than what we see in our own portfolio. So on a statewide basis, that will be really helpful information that we'll be able to get.
The process for applying for rent or mortgage relief is simple. Go to alaskahousingrelief.org to access the online application or call or text RELIEF to 833-440-0420 if you are unable to access the application online. The application period begins at 7 a.m. Monday, June 15th and ends at 11:59 p.m. on June 26th. The brief application includes a basic questionnaire asking your name, primary address, and certification of loss of income.
Really, the entire application process should take less than 5 minutes.
The lottery will take place when the application period closes. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation will then pool all names using an established practice in public housing, then run a randomized statewide lottery. When chosen, recipients will be asked to provide additional information that verifies their loss of income and includes contact information for their landlord or mortgage lender.
The income requirement does apply to those who have lost income as a result of COVID-19. So it could be reduced hours, it could be total layoff, it could be any number of things that have affected their business. If they're a small business and they've had to close doors or reduce hours, they would obviously be able to qualify for this program.
Payment distribution is targeted for July 2020. While Alaska's Housing Assistance Lottery provides a short-term gap stop for struggling households, there is no long-term housing assistance plan in the wake of the economic devastation caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, which has concerned many economists as the United States has been in recession since February. Alaska households struggling to meet rent and mortgage obligations in recent months have had the security of Senate Bill 241, the statewide moratorium on foreclosures and evictions, which Governor Mike Dunleavy signed in May. But the moratorium is set to end on June 30th, and Governor Dunleavy has not indicated if the state will extend that moratorium. For KMXT News, I'm Jared Griffin.
A Superior Court judge has ruled that the state must correct its summary for a ballot initiative that would raise oil taxes. Judge William Morse sided with the backers of the initiative and said the summary provided by Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer was not impartial as required by state law. Moore's ordered that Meyer delete a problematic sentence from the summary. That sentence had to do with oil producers' tax filings. The group backing the initiative, often referred to as Ballot Measure 1, say they want tax filings made public so Alaskans can see the revenues and costs for the state's three largest oil fields. Meyer's summary of the initiative says if it became law, the filings would be subject to the state's normal public records process. The initiative's backers objected to that description. They say it's not the same because the state could decide to keep some of the information confidential. Judge Morse agreed. He says Myers placed, quote, his finger on the scales when he stated the provision does not mean what its sponsors say they intended. He says Meyer engaged in partisan suasion and that it is improper. The State Department of Law says it disagrees with the judge's decision, while the backers of the initiative have claimed victory. The initiative is expected to appear on the November ballot. Juneau's police department has released its internal policy on how and when officers can use force. Earlier this week, Juneau Assembly members asked to see the written policy, and Chief Ed Mercer refused to turn it over without first consulting with the police department's legal team. Deputy Chief David Campbell said on Thursday that police are always going to have to use force, but it has to be justified. During a lunch meeting on Thursday with the city's Chamber of Commerce, Campbell said that for people who aren't used to seeing officers use pepper spray or a taser, it can be difficult to figure out what is justified.
From violence or to overcome the resistance when people are trying to be arrested. So if it's reasonable and necessary, then the officers are justifiable in using it. But for people that aren't used to living in this world, you know, you could see something that might be reasonable and necessary, and it could look really, really bad.
During the chamber meeting, both Campbell and Mercer brought up the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police. A widely shared video of Floyd's death shows a police officer kneeling on his neck for several minutes during an arrest, even as Floyd repeatedly said he couldn't breathe.
I'll say the issue that happened in Minneapolis was outrageous. I've never seen anything like that before. We don't train that way.
He said also that it was absolutely wrong. And when an officer does something like use pepper spray or use a taser, one of the things they are trained on is that they use them correctly. He said, quote, oftentimes those justifiable actions do look really bad, end quote. The City and Borough of Juneau will hold a digital listening session to hear community concerns on policing, racism, and social justice next Wednesday at 7 p.m. It's almost summertime and you're stuck in your living room all day working from home. Sounds like a great time to go for a bike ride, right? Wrong, unless you already have one in your garage. Nat Herz with Alaska's Public Media reports on how the COVID-19 pandemic has caused a rush on bicycles across the state.
This morning, I called a handful of Alaska bike shops to ask if they could talk about how things have been going over the past few months. Here was one response.
I'd love to, but we're really, really all busy right now, if that kind of answers your question.
Over at the bike shop, manager Nicholas Carmen had a little more time to chat, although the situation there is similar.
We're just seeing a massive demand for new bicycles.
Carmen says sales are about twice normal levels, mirroring a national trend. So are requests for repairs, enough that the shop has had to turn people down for the first time in its 55 years in business. Now it's contending with a huge shortage in bikes to sell. This is becoming a national problem because the coronavirus disrupted the bicycle supply chain in Asia.
So the least expensive bikes disappeared first, and then quickly after that, $700 bikes, $900 bikes. And I think at every step of the way, we all thought that it wouldn't just continue to climb up the chain, but in fact, it's basically just every bike that we could get from the brands that we work with are disappearing.
It's like toilet paper, like it's just gone nationwide.
Joel Booth owns Goldstream Sports in Fairbanks. He's reporting the exact same kind of thing. People were going stir crazy in the winter, then had to stay away from people as the coronavirus initially spread through Alaska. And while many people needed their $1,200 federal relief checks for basic necessities, some used them for bikes. Booth has a range of mountain bikes left, but very few road bikes and no hybrids at all. As far as when things will get better?
Next season. Right now, if I put in orders for bikes, it's October or November before I'll see most of anything.
In the meantime, bike advocates are thinking about how they can make the most of the pandemic cycling boom, and they're also just stoked.
It's so cool. It's so exciting. I'm so excited.
Chelsea Wardwaller is board president of Bike Anchorage. The group sent a letter this month to Mayor Ethan Berkowitz pointing out how increasingly busy trails and sidewalks are making it harder to stay socially distant. And they note that with fewer people commuting to work in their cars, there are fewer of them on the road. The group is suggesting dedicating a bikes-only lane in busy avenues like A Street or C Street, as well as restricting traffic in a few smaller streets to allow more recreational opportunities there. Dev Barrera is Bike Anchorage's director.
There's a lot of demand. There's going to have to be supply by the government. So creating other spaces for cyclists, it's going to have to happen.
If you want to get out, but you're still stuck without a bike, shop owners say you can look for a used one, but because of those laws of supply and demand, you'll probably end up paying a little bit more than you would have before the pandemic. In Anchorage, I'm Matt Herz.
This week on the Alaska Fisheries Report, more and more it seems commercial fisheries news in Alaska deals with the coronavirus pandemic and COVID-19. This week is no exception. Small coastal Alaskan towns prepare for swarms of fishermen and others who may bring the highly contagious COVID-19 disease with them from outside of Alaska or even from other areas of the state. We look at the Washington State factory trawler, where three-fourths of its 120-member crew has tested positive for COVID-19. Bristol Bay communities don't have enough medical facilities to handle a big outbreak of COVID-19. Help came by way of an evangelical Christian organization, which flew in a field hospital out to the Bristol Bay borough. And finally, a letter to fishermen outlines the rules for fishing this summer. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. The Alaska Fisheries Report is produced here at KMXT. You can listen to it on Fridays at 5:20 p.m. during the evening news and on Saturdays at 12:15 during the midday report. And on a personal note, today is my last day reporting at KMXT. I'm going to miss my coworkers and this station and our community very much. I'm moving to Anchorage to report for Alaska Public Media, so there's a good chance that you'll still hear me on Alaska News Nightly on KMXT from time to time. When I started this job, I was new to hosting newscasts, and I really grew to love delivering the news to you every day. So thank you for sticking with me through my on-air flubs and calling in with your feedback and making Kodiak such an incredible place to live and work. On to Fish Radio.
The Midday Report on KMXT is brought to you in part by Ardiner's Fine Furnishings, where you'll find the Simmons Dual Comfort Mattress, allowing you to customize your sleep experience. Also featuring massage and zero-gravity chairs from the Human Touch Company and sofas and love seats by Stanton. 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Summer also means dropping pots for dungies. Some crab updates after this.
Grundins urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Grundins, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
A dozen boats have pulled up about 100,000 pounds of Dungeness crab from a northern part of Kodiak Island since May, and a bigger chunk on the south end opens June 15th. That also will attract more boats, says Nat Nichols, area shellfish manager at Fish and Game in Kodiak.
Last year, just right around, including Alitac, was almost 800,000, 900,000 pounds out of our 1.5 million, so over half.
Dungy prices have reportedly plummeted by more than a dollar from last year's Kodiak average of $2.65 a pound. That's prompted more sales direct from the dock at $10 a crab. Southeast Alaska. Alaska's summer Dungeness fishery also opens on June 15th, and several million pounds could come out of that fishery. Last year's summer catch of 4.2 million pounds was the best in a decade for 200 permit holders. Southeast also has a smaller fall dungey opener. The combined dockside value in 2019 for a 5.3 million pound catch set a record at $16.3 million. Back at Kodiak, the summer survey for Tanner crab also is getting underway. They're tracking the largest recruitment of crab they've ever seen, estimated at 270 million tanners.
By the time we see them in the survey, they're, you know, maybe the size of a quarter and about a year old, a year or two even. So when we see them in the survey for the first time, it's typically about 4 years until we see them legal in a survey. So using that timing, you know, we first saw them in 18. This group would be seen in a survey at a legal size in 2022 for a 2023 fishery.
Lots of the crab appear to be growing faster than normal, and Nichols says the leading edge could be ready sooner.
Based on the first year we went and looked back at them, I think seeing a good chunk of them, or at least the leading edge of them, legal in a 2021 survey, so that's next summer, for a 2022 fishery is not unlikely.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMSI instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Welcome to this noon edition of the Island Messenger. In Kodiak today, it's 55 degrees and mostly cloudy, although here on Signal Hill, it's looking like it's getting pretty sunny from the east. This afternoon should be sunny with a high near 57, calm winds becoming east around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 47, sunshine into the weekend, and mostly cloudy by Monday. In Homer today, it's 54 degrees and fair. Today's going to be mostly cloudy, highs near 60. And in Anchorage, it's 56 degrees, mostly cloudy, a 20% chance of showers before 1 p.m., mostly cloudy otherwise, and a high near 63. Quick look at the marine forecast for today from Marmot Island to Sitkanak. Variable winds of 10 knots with seas at 4 feet. Tonight, south winds of 15 knots, seas at 4 feet again. Chiniak Bay today, variable winds of less than 10 knots, seas at 3 feet. Tonight, variable winds less than 10 knots, seas at 2 feet. Marmot Bay today, variable winds of less than 10 knots, seas at 3 feet. And tonight, southwest winds of 10 knots with seas at 2 feet. Shelikof Strait today, southwest winds of 15 knots with seas at 4 feet. And tonight, southwest winds of 20 knots, seas at 6 feet. Today is June 12th. Sunrise this morning was at 5:10 a.m. Sunset tonight will be at 11:10 p.m. That's 18 hours, 2 minutes of daylight, which is a minute 15 seconds more than we got yesterday. The record high on this day was 68 degrees in 1915, and the record low was 35 in 1939 and again in 1985. Looking at our tides for today, low tide for Kodiak will be out at 1:49 p.m., 0.69 feet. High tide will be back in 8:45 p.m., 6.46 feet. Over on the west side, low tide's at 2.21 p.m., 1.97 feet. High tide will be in at 9.01 p.m., 11.81 feet. Let's go to our fish and game announcement for today.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 2, date issued June 12th at 10 a.m. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Sunday, June 14th, until 9 p.m. Monday, June 15th, in the following areas. In the northwest Kodiak District, the southwest of Fognak, northwest of Fognak, Paul's Bay, and Paranosa Bay sections of the Fognak District, the east side Kodiak District, and the Big River and outer Kukak Bay sections of the mainland district. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Sunday, June 14th, until 9 p.m. Monday, June 15th, in the following areas. At Kaplea Creek, stream number 262301 to the stream terminus, and at Saltry Creek, stream number 259415 to the stream terminus. As previously announced, the following areas remain open to commercial fishing until further notice. The Inner Katoy, Outer Katoy, Duck Bay, and Nijuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse hand gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced in the following locations. In Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And stream number, or Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour cordophone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Island Byways is supported by Orion's Mountain Sports, specializing in high-quality clothing and equipment for hiking, climbing, and kayaking. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the June 12th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Boy, a walk around a pond, through the woods, or even through a field during the late evening is like walking through an aviary. Lots and lots of singing going on with all the birds around. And lots of pollen being spread around by all sorts of flying things. Bees, flies, and birds. The mosquitoes are already impressive, and summer has just begun. It's amazing the growth that's happened in the past week or week and a half. Salmonberry bushes are blooming, the elderberries bloomed overnight, I think, and the spruce tips are abundant. We are just about to pass what I think of as perfect hiking season. The alders are pretty full, salmonberry bushes are getting close, too. The grasses aren't too tall yet, so that's a plus. But the trails are soon going to be a little more overgrown, so hiking's great right now. If you're hiking along the shoreline, especially in the area from Spruce Cape to Monashka Bay, keep your eyes and ears open for humpbacks. There have been a couple sighted in Mill Bay, off Spruce Cape, off Miller Point, and around Buoy 4 over the past couple of weeks. And if you're out on Narrow Cape, you're very likely to see gray whales, maybe even close to shore as they rub along the bottom. Looking toward the floral end of the nature spectrum, many things are in bloom or are about to bloom right now. Violets, shooting stars, lupin, rose purple orchis, and anemones grace our meadows, alpine areas, woodlands, and seashores. Speaking of plants, the new yellow on the block, replacing the dandelion, is the buttercup. And they are prolific. If you happen to be up around 3 a.m. as the moon rises over the next couple of nights, you'll have a chance to see Mars and the moon hanging out together. Enjoy. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.